Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this September 27. You may recall an interview we did last week with Ari Berman, who had a piece in the Rolling Stone about the title of it was Congress. Well, it was about the GOP war on voting. He subsequently has written a piece, Congress Investigates GOP War on Voting. He said that in a systematic campaign orchestrated by the American Legislative Exchange Council and funded in part by David and Charles Koch, the billionaire brothers who bankrolled the Tea Party, 38 states introduced legislation this year designed to impede voters at every step of the electoral process. A dozen states have approved new obstacles to voting, he writes. Kansas and Alabama require would-be voters to provide proof of citizenship before registering. Florida and Texas made it harder for groups like the League of Women Voters to register new voters. Maine repealed Election Day voter registration, which had been on the books since 1973. Several states cut short their early voting periods. Florida and Iowa barred all ex-felons from the polls. And six states, he writes, controlled by Republican governors and legislatures, Alabama, Kansas, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin, will require voters to produce a government-issued ID before casting ballots. The Congress has now started investigating this. Dick Durbin held hearings last week, and our guest this hour spoke in favor of voter ID. Senator Durbin said that he was deeply concerned by this coordinated, well-funded effort to pass laws that could have impact on suppressing votes in some states. Our guest this hour is Hans Van Spakovsky, senior legal fellow and manager of the Civil Justice Reform Initiative at the Heritage Foundation. We did contact the other organization, and they said that we should talk to Heritage, that he was certainly the expert on this issue. He has an interesting background. He examines how civil justice is administered in state and federal courts as a senior legal fellow. He researches and writes about aspects of election law like campaign finance, voter fraud, voter identification, as well as registration and equipment issues. He served 2 years as a member of the Federal Election Commission, the authority charged with enforcing campaign finance laws for congressional and presidential elections. And he worked at the Justice Department as counsel to the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, providing expertise in enforcing the Voting Rights Act and the Help America Vote Act of 2002. And he is with us this hour to talk about voter ID, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. They're already coming in. He says in a piece he's written extensively about this that requiring voters to authenticate their identity at the polling place is necessary to protect the integrity of elections and access to the voting process. Every illegal vote steals or dilutes the vote of a legitimate voter. Opponents of voter ID claim that it can only prevent impersonation and fraud at the polls, which rarely happens. That assertion, he says, is incorrect. Voter ID can prevent and deter impersonation fraud at the polls, voting under fictitious voter registrations, double voting by individuals registered in more than one state or locality, and voting by illegal aliens or even legal aliens who still are not entitled to vote since state and federal elections are restricted to U.S. citizens. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Hans. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. We had some problems locating him, so we hope he's here right now. Hans? Hello? He appears to not be there. All right, we'll try and reach him by another way, and I would imagine that we'll have a lot of phone calls on this particular issue. The organization we did try to reach after speaking with Ari last week was the American Legislative Exchange Council, a major player behind the new photo ID laws, but they said that they had nobody to speak to this issue, so they had us go to the Heritage Foundation. Hans, can you hear me? We're just having problems with this line for some reason. I'm sorry, everybody, but we will get him because he's there. We just don't have a special connection that we use to get a really, really crisp sound quality. So he will be with us momentarily. We'll just try and reach him on another phone line. Let me just tell you briefly that the second hour of our program, we will have our September open line. So we invite you to put your thinking caps on and come up with terrific suggestions of programs you would like to hear in the upcoming months between the hours of 9 and 11. And we take your suggestions pretty seriously. We hope to get some really good ones. And we do follow through, as you know, on many of your suggestions. We have our eyes and ears in many places, but you're a smart, engaged audience, and you always give us issues that we have overlooked or possibilities of guests who may add to conversations that we have already had. So that's our number two of our program today. That's not now. We are going to talk about voter ID, and we should do so pretty darn soon, we hope. Interesting shows coming up during the course of this week. We will tell you about those, some great books that are coming up, one a presidential book, and Ron Suskind will be joining us tomorrow. His book has been getting a whole lot of attention, so all of that will be coming up. We'll tell you more about it. So we're just trying to link and get our guest. We'll try one more time on this line. Hans, hello.
Kathleen,
oh, there you are. I can hear you fine. Oh, thank goodness. I didn't know where you were. We knew you were in the studio, but it wasn't working, but now it's working.
Well, thank goodness it's not election day and it wasn't a piece of voting equipment.
Exactly. Thank you, Hans, very much for being with us.
Sure.
There are now congressional hearings taking place on this issue. We, as you know, had Ari Berman on our show last week, and he talked about, and let me just tell you, ask you whether or not you think that this is the case or not, that a systematic campaign orchestrated by the American Legislative Exchange Council, funded in part by the Koch brothers, 38 states introduced legislation this year designed to impede voters at every step of the electoral process, surmising, he does, that this is really a politically motivated campaign on the part of conservative Republicans. Your response?
Well, I would laugh if he wasn't being serious about it. The problem with that is that the American people certainly don't agree with him. I mean, the polling shows, for example, that the vast majority of American people, and Rasmussen says this goes across all racial, ethnic, and party lines, think that voter ID is a common sense requirement, and they agree with it. You know, the other essence of what he's saying is that this is some kind of, you know, deep, dark conspiracy to try to suppress the vote. Well, that's been disproven in the courtroom and in the polling place, because if you look at turnout in states that have put in photo ID, like Indiana and Georgia, we've now had several elections with those laws in place. And in fact, turnout has not been depressed. Turnout has increased in those states. There were significant increases in turnout of, for example, African-American voters in Georgia, which has a large black population. And look, the same claims have been made in court cases. You know, the Indiana case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. It was upheld. The Georgia law was also, there was a lawsuit in federal court. And one of the things the court noted in both cases was that the plaintiffs in the cases, and these included organizations like the ACLU and the NAACP, said that there were literally hundreds of thousands of individuals who didn't have photo ID, wouldn't be able to vote. And one of the reasons their cases were thrown out was because after years of litigation, they couldn't produce a single individual, not one witness, who would be unable to vote because of the photo ID requirement.
And yet we find that most of the states that have initiated this have Republican governors. We find that there are a number of Democrats, including the former President Bill Clinton, who says that since we got rid of the poll tax and all the Jim Crow burdens on voting, he's never seen anything like this determined effort to limit the franchise that we see today. It does seem to break down along party lines, doesn't it? Or am I reading this incorrectly?
Well, it has initially, but I think that's because, unfortunately, too many Democratic representatives have the wrong reaction to this. And in fact, that has changed somewhat. Kansas, for example, you know, put in a photo ID law. And when it came to the final version of the law, a significant number of Democrats voted for it. Same thing in Rhode Island, which, you know, now has a new photo ID law. You know, that's a state that is controlled by Democrats, and the governor, Lincoln Chafee, an independent, signed it into law, and it was sponsored, for example, in the state Senate by a Democratic African-American senator who said that this is a common sense requirement, and it's one that the vast majority of people can easily meet. And for the very small number of people who don't have an ID, the state provides a free ID. And that's the same thing that's happened in the other states like Georgia and Indiana that have put this kind of law into place.
Do you think there is widespread voter fraud?
No, and I've said in my articles that I've written about this that nobody is claiming there's widespread voter fraud. But we have a long history of voter fraud, including, I might say, in Wisconsin. And as the Supreme Court said in the Indiana case, when they upheld Indiana's law, voter fraud, there's a long documented history of it. We have enough incidents that we need to take precautions against it, and it could make the difference in a close election.
What's the voter fraud in Wisconsin that is concerning you?
Well, anybody who's interested in that just can do a quick Google search, and they can find the report that was put out by a special unit of the Milwaukee Police Department that took a look at the 2004 election, and they found all kinds of things, including individuals coming in from out of state to register and vote because you have no photo ID requirement. That included, by the way, out-of-state campaigners for the John Kerry organization. And if you look at the recommendations in their report, they actually suggest that voters present a photo ID to prove their eligibility.
You talk about how easy it is to get a voter ID. There are a couple of things. One is taking place. There's a legislative hearing this afternoon in Wisconsin concerning students, because as it is right now, students can't vote. So there's a talk about whether or not schools will get the money to change a student ID so that it's got a time on it and all of the requirements that are necessary for voter ID. What do you think about students voting? That's a huge number of people. And at this point in time, their access to voting, it appear to me, and I'm sure to many others, is being hampered.
Well, look, students should vote. I voted when I was in college. But what we want to be sure of is that they are voting in the residence, in the state where they have, in fact, their residence and intend to stay. And one of the problems I think we've run into before is students who go out of state continue to be registered in their home state and are double registered. And I don't think there's any we shouldn't put any impediments in the way of students to vote, but they've got to make a decision whether they want to continue to be a resident of, you know, their home state where they came from, where they probably have their driver's license and maybe registered to vote, or whether they want to change their residence to the new state they're in, like Wisconsin, if they're going to the University of Wisconsin, and take all the steps they need to take to become a resident and register to vote there.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the accessibility of these photo IDs, there are many who are saying that it's not all that easy, that you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles in Wisconsin, they're not open. Some of them are only open one day a month, that a huge number of minorities in cities particularly do not have driver's licenses. So it requires going there when it's open, finding out where it is, taking public transportation to get there. A lot of these people don't have very much money, standing in long lines. We've all been to DMVs, and sometimes you can be there for a good chunk of time, so you may have to take a day off work, et cetera. A lot of people are saying it's just not that easy to do this.
Well, my answer to that would be that the exact same claim was raised in Georgia. And Georgia has an African-American population that's probably about a quarter of the state. So it's a very large African-American population. And those claims were found not to be correct by the federal court that looked at it. And in fact, even the NAACP, who was a plaintiff in the case, they couldn't find a single one of their members who either didn't have a photo ID or couldn't easily to get one. And so, you know, I realize people raise that claim, but so far in all the litigation, when they actually had to provide evidence that it would be a problem, they were unable to do so.
We have a ton of people who want to talk to you. We're going to go to phone calls in just one moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Last week, Ari Berman was with us. He wrote a piece in the Rolling Stone about voting. He wrote a follow-up piece on congressional investigation of what he calls a GOP war on voting. Our guest this hour really believes strongly in photo ID for the reasons he's outlined. Hans von Spakovsky is with us, senior legal fellow and at the Heritage Foundation Center for Legal and Judicial Studies. He served a couple years as a member of the Federal Election Commission. That authority is charged with enforcing campaign finance laws for congressional and presidential elections. He has also served on the Board of Advisors of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission and the Fulton, Georgia Board of Registrations and Elections. Our phone lines are filled right now, but keep the number in your mind because we'll get to you as soon as we can. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, and let us start with Rich in Sullivan. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Thanks very much, Kathleen, for this this program. I believe money should never be a factor in voting. That's a basic point. And a news item in Wisconsin recently revolved around the fact that the Department of Motor Vehicles in Wisconsin for an ID lists the fee on its website of $28 to get an ID. There was a person in that division who pointed out that if applicants request that they get the ID for free, it was to be provided for free, but they had been instructed not do that. And if I am not misinterpreting that episode, I believe that employee was dismissed for kind of whistleblowing on that. And I also have experience in Wisconsin because this will sound awful, but I own a lot of property and I had resided in the southern part of the state. I now reside in the northern part of the state. But I had had the experience in the predominantly and reliably Republican county in the South, Jefferson, having voted there for nearly a quarter century, telling the clerk in my township that I had re-registered in northern Wisconsin for a period of time when I lived there and had moved back to southern Wisconsin and had re-registered, and then moved back to northern Wisconsin after a suitable period of time and registered up there. I was never double-registered. I did receive a postcard in the mail with my middle name misspelled with the instructions on it saying, is this your name as registered? If not, you must notify the clerk immediately. I consider that voting caging going on. That is, not allowing people to determine where they're going to vote on the basis of where they are residing at the time. And in the case of students, it would be terrible if they had to be charged $28 when they didn't have the $28. So money should never be connected to voting in our nation. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Hans.
Well, I mean, every state that I know of that's passed a photo ID law has also passed a provision saying that if you can't afford one, you'll provide one free. So, I mean, that issue has been taken care of in the statutes that have been passed.
So you would see that as something that should be widely known in Wisconsin?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. And obviously, if some, you know, employee or department is not doing that, then, yeah, they should be disciplined because you need to be able to provide a free photo ID.
Harv in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I was calling about the voter fraud concerns of the 2004 election in Wisconsin. Out of 1.5 million voters, so we must be speaking of hundreds or thousands of sound voter frauds, sir. I'm just wondering what your level of concern is to go through all this trouble for the, I guess, must be hundreds or thousands of voter frauds found in the 2004 election in Wisconsin.
Well, I think in Wisconsin, the 2004 election, one particular candidate only won by 11,000 votes. And in Florida in 2000, we had a presidential election that was decided by 500 votes. And that, despite the fact that, for example, a New York newspaper who did a comparison of New York City's voter registration list with Florida found thousands of people who were registered in both states, and they estimated between 400 and 1,000 people who had voted in both states in the same election in a state, Florida, where presidential election was decided by a little over 500 votes. The point is, it can make a difference in a close election, and this is no different than the fact that we have to provide photo ID if you want to buy a beer, board an airplane, check into a hotel, or do any of those things today in the kind of modern society we live in.
Were those cases investigated? Do we know that for a fact, or do we imagine there were that many people who voted improperly?
They did a comparison of the voter registration list and using the identifying information on the voters, found people in both states. I mean, another good example of this is came out of Indiana. The League of Women Voters, you know, filed a brief, amicus brief in the Supreme Court, arguing against the Indiana voter ID law. They illustrated one particular Indiana resident saying she had had enormous trouble voting. Well, a newspaper there investigated the case and talked to the lady, and it turned out the reason she had had trouble voting in Indiana was because when she tried to vote, she pulled out a Florida driver's license. She had a Florida driver's license. She was also registered to vote in Florida as well as in Indiana. Now, she could have easily voted in both states without anybody knowing about it, but because of the voter ID law, you know, that was prevented, and it was discovered that she was registered in two different states, which she shouldn't be.
But the question remains how many people fall into that category, whether or not it's tens of thousands or it's a handful.
Well, if you want to look at the different kinds of problems this can stop, I think you mentioned them before, you know, impersonation fraud, voting under fictitious voter registration names, double voting, and potential voting by people who are in the United States illegally.
Thanks for the call, Harv. We go to Willem in Colfax. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to address that last thing that he said. The Wisconsin, or it wasn't like anyone could just walk in and vote. You had to register. You have to show proof of residency, all that sort of thing. It wasn't like anyone could vote, and especially not illegal aliens and things like that. So, and also voter ID things, just like other identification, can be forged. So if someone's really intent on voting, that shouldn't, they can get a forged voter ID thing. And the thing about the money is that it's free, but it's only free if you ask for it to be free. They don't inform you that it's free. And my wife, who works at our local voting poll, went to orientation yesterday, and there's 6 hours of training involved, which is paid for by the taxpayers. And one of the things that I didn't know about the law was that if you're a student and you vote, not only do you have to have a student ID, you have to show proof of proof that you paid tuition. So they're making it very difficult for students to vote. Plus, colleges used to issue 4-year IDs. Now it has to be 2-year IDs. And the head of the University of Stout, Wisconsin Stout, said that this would possibly cost the university as much as $100,000. So all this is meddling, and it does nothing to address the problem of voter fraud on the part of officials. Like maybe in Waukesha County, there was some doubt about how the votes were handled and manipulation of voting machines. And those are more serious concerns about fraud, and this does nothing to address that. And it only costs the taxpayers a lot of money, and now we have the most restrictive law, voting law, in the whole country.
Hans.
Well, my answer to that is that the voting and voter registration process is one where you want to have security and integrity all along, and you don't try to deal with one problem and ignore others. You know, if you're concerned about particular election officials, well, you know, that's one of the reasons we try to have transparent elections in which we have poll watchers of both parties And both parties and third parties should be there watching the process from start to finish, from registration to being in polling places all over the state to in the evenings, you know, being in the downtown headquarters where they're counting votes. And that's the way you take care of those issues. Yeah, you can get fake ID, but that makes it more difficult. There are no perfect security systems. You know, any security expert will tell you that. But there are some steps you can take that make it more difficult to commit fraud. I take it that the caller thinks that since he doesn't believe voter ID should be needed, that because it's a problem for folks, that we should not be checking photo ID at airports.
Buying is different than voting.
Really? How is it? You have a fundamental right under the Constitution to travel within the United States. You know, another example of this is you have a fundamental right to employment in the United States, and yet the federal government has a federal law that says that no individual can be employed without providing identification documentation authenticating not only their identity, but the fact that they are a U.S. citizen or a citizen who is a non-citizen who's here legally who has a work permit. The states are simply implementing the same kind of requirement for voting, which to me is just as important as my ability to work and provide for my family.
But no, you know, I'm not required to fly, but I would like to vote, and it's already, you already have to prove your residency and all that sort of stuff. It already existed. It's not like anyone.
That's incorrect. Under Wisconsin's law for same day registration, as I understand it, another voter can just vouch for you and say, "Oh yeah, that person lives here." Look, all I can tell you is that the Milwaukee Police Department, which investigated this thoroughly, they recommended not only the elimination of the same-day voter registration system because of the problems they found, but they also suggested that voters present a photo ID to prove their eligibility to vote.
Nonetheless, Wisconsin has had a reputation as having extraordinarily clean government for a long period of time. I have lived here for 36 years now, and I can't recall a time when voter fraud has been a huge issue in the state of Wisconsin. I there haven't been any huge investigations of it. There's never been, there may be a few little isolated stories here and there, but I don't think it's ever been a huge problem.
Well, you know, what the Supreme Court said, the Seventh Circuit said about that particular issue was they said, well, you know, how are you going to know, for example, about impersonation fraud if you don't have the tools to check it? And if you look at the end of that, the Milwaukee Police Department report, one of the things they say there is that the administration of elections in Wisconsin and the maintenance of records was so sloppy and so badly done that it was very difficult for them to make sense of some of the records and some of the things that they saw happening.
Do you believe there are a lot of people who are in this country illegally who are voting?
Well, I wrote a paper about that, and I would remind you that we almost had a congressional election in the mid-1990s overturned by people who were not U.S. citizens who were running. You may recall that the incumbent Bob Dornan was beaten by Loretta Sanchez. She won by a little over 900 votes. He contested the election. A House committee investigated, and they found that over 600 of the votes cast in that one election had been cast by people who were not U.S. citizens. Now, they didn't overturn it because there was a little over a 200-vote margin, but that is an example of it. Another one, you can look this up also, Compton, California. There was a mayor's contest. When the case went to court, people who were not U.S. citizens swore under oath in court that, in fact, they had voted in that election, and a city councilwoman was not only removed from office in that case, but she was barred under a state law from ever holding office again because of the fact that she had been out actively soliciting people who were not U.S. citizens to register and vote in that election. It does happen, and there are cases of it that have been found all over the country.
I would think that if you are here illegally, you'd want to keep yourself under the radar.
Well, in fact, there was testimony from the head of the INS in the mid-1980s after it was discovered that there were large numbers of people who were not U.S. citizens registered and voting in Chicago. And what he said was that the voter registration card is very easily obtained, and you can then use it to get other forms of identification. And, in fact, the U.S. attorney in Chicago prosecuted dozens of people who were not U.S. citizens because they had registered and voted in the 1982 governor's race in Illinois.
An email from Jeanette in Milwaukee. I hope I'm wrong, but I heard that if you are submitting an absentee ballot, you still have to send in a copy of a photo ID. How in the world can the Election Commission determine if the photo matches?
Well, I don't know the answer to that because I'm not familiar with that particular provision.
But you do have to have, I read that somewhere too. Do you have to have a photo ID if you're doing absentee ballot? Is that part of the...
In Wisconsin? I don't know.
Other states?
Well, what they've done in Kansas, for example, is they've passed a provision that says that when you send in your request for an absentee ballot, you're supposed to put your driver's license number on the absentee ballot request. Someone that wants to request an absentee ballot in your name can easily do it these days because all you need is a name and an address. But if you put in a requirement like that, it makes it more difficult for other folks to do that. And absentee ballots, in fact, are a problem. They're kind of the tool of choice, a Florida investigation some years ago said, for people who want to steal elections.
And a lot of people vote absentee, so this may need further investigation, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there are problems with absentee ballots. 1997, the Miami Herald won a Pulitzer Prize for its investigation of a mayor's race down there. It went to court. The court threw out the results of the mayor's race because they found that over 5,000 absentee ballots, fraudulent absentee ballots, have been filed. Same thing happened in Indiana around 2003.
Willem, thanks, Jeanette. Thanks for your email. We go to Bill in Madison. Hi.
Hello, boy. This fellow has brought up a lot of things. But the reason I called is I believe the whole issue of voter fraud, in spite of all the specific examples that he was able to bring up, is a red herring. And what really needs to be looked at is the software that is used throughout the country for tabulating votes. Diebold's software company, they're the ones who write most of the software that's being used nowadays. It's proprietary software. They don't allow access to anyone for the software, for the source code. It'd be easy as heck to program it to flip votes every 100 votes or so from one to the other, for example. Another thing is Diebold is known for being a heavy contributor to GOP causes and GOP candidates, as well as GOP National Committee.
All right. Do we need to look at this issue as well, Hans?
Well, that's an interesting fantasy, but the problem with that analysis is there's no evidence of that whatsoever. And in fact, all of the software that's used in the United States in elections is certified by testing laboratories. There are several that have been set up. Their work is approved by and certified by the United States Election Assistance Commission, and they test that software before it is sold in the states for voting equipment. The one time this claim has ever been made was a couple of years ago. You may recall, Kathleen, there was a congressional race down in Florida a couple of years ago where there were allegations that somehow the software had changed the voting outcome. That was investigated by a House committee again. They took apart the software, took a look at it, and found that, quite frankly, there was nothing to those allegations.
What do you think about, this is a related subject, ex-felons and voting? I know that in Florida and I believe in Iowa, they used to be able to vote, and now that has been changed. Should ex-felons be able to vote?
I think that's up to each state to decide. In the vast majority of American states, felons get their right to vote back as soon as they're out of prison. I mean, my personal opinion about that is that I think you should not only get out of prison, but you should also have taken care of all of the other parts of your sentence, for example, you know, reimbursement to victims, et cetera. The thing about that is, look, lots of folks argue that felons have paid their debt to society. They should be given the right to vote back. They don't seem to understand that we don't just take away the right to vote of felons. In many states, they can't engage in certain public employment. They can't be police officers. They can't own a gun. They can't be a notary public. Whenever I hear discussions about restoring the right to vote, I don't hear a lot of talk about all of these other issues. And if you're going to look at this, you should look at it all together and decide, you know, if you believe these people can be trusted once again to vote, well, can they also be trusted to once again work in public employment? Can they be trusted once again to be able to exercise their Second Amendment right?
Let's go next to Dave in Fitchburg. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. This is clearly voter suppression. I worked for many, many years as a poll worker in a medium-sized jurisdiction in Wisconsin, and we have never, ever, ever had even the allegation of voter fraud in the history of the jurisdiction. Furthermore, in the sub-jurisdiction where I work, we have lots of minorities. They're scared of everything. They're scared of the police. They're scared of everything. These votes take place at the fire station, and, you know, there are cars out there that look like police cars from other jurisdictions where they come from, and they're already scared to death. And a lot of them are dissuaded from voting for just about any little tiny nothing reason. And certainly having an ID is a major, major, major reason. They're from other jurisdictions where the police aren't like the Madison police that are, you know, they're, or the police around the jurisdiction. I'm not talking about Madison. It's not Madison. It's not a jurisdiction. I mean, they're from other places. And so, you know, we have great police here, but south of the Mason-Dixon line, completely different story.
Hans.
Well, the problem with that is that anecdotal story has been proven to be untrue. I mean, let me just give you a quick number. Look, in 2008, Georgia had its photo ID law in place for the first time. They had the largest turnout in their history, Democratic turnout in the general election went up 6.1 percentage points. That was the fifth largest increase of any state in the country. The black share of the vote in Georgia went from 25% in 2004 when they had no photo ID to 30% in 2008. And for those who will say, well, you know, this was a election, you know, Barack Obama was there. Sorry, the same thing happened in the 2010 election. In 2010, 50.4% of black registered voters, Georgians, voted, compared to only 43% in 2006. There was an increase of 7 percentage points. It did not suppress the vote of minority voters. And look, there's a number of academic studies that have looked at this, including one by the University of Delaware, Nebraska. They looked at numerous elections in all 50 states. They found that voter ID laws do not suppress the votes of voters across all racial and socioeconomic lines. And the concluding line in the report was that claim or that worry is much ado about nothing.
Thanks, Dave, for the call. Steve in Soldiers Grove. Hi.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
I got one of my questions was sort of answered. I had a question about absentee voting, and I'm not real sure on that. But the other thing I have questions about is what about I'm a Vietnam veteran. I've been around for quite a few years. I worked in the police force in Chicago, and I've seen quite a bit of abuse in polling places in Chicago. We used to, under Mayor Daley Sr., we go out and pick up people off the street and take them to the polling place and the precinct captain and go in the booth with them and push the buttons and throw the lever for them. And then we'd go out and get another car full of people. A lot of people living on the street in my district. But what about the homeless veterans? You know, I'm a veteran and I'm in pretty good shape. I've got a home. I can show where I live, and I can get this voter ID card, I'm sure. But what about all these Iraqi veterans and some Vietnam veterans that are still living on the street and still might want to vote? And where do they go? What are they supposed to do? They don't have any money. They're not going to go to some big hall and sit and wait to get a driver's license of some kind or an ID card of some type that's going to cost them money. They can't even buy a meal. And I have some concerns about that. The only voter fraud, and I've been in office, I was a mayor here in Wisconsin, I just don't understand. I have never, ever seen the kind of voter fraud that this gentleman's talking about. I just never saw it. I understand Republicans are they're still upset about 40 years ago when Kennedy got elected because of the Chicago vote. And I can tell you, there was some corruption there. But this is, in my opinion, this is not the answer. This is not going to change anything except make it more difficult for a lot of people that have earned the right to vote. And this is going to certainly interfere with their being able to do so. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thanks for the call, Steve. Hans?
Well, almost all the states that have passed photo ID laws have a specific provision in them allowing military IDs to be sufficient for voting. And that includes, you know, not just a current, what they call a CAC card, which I'm sure this gentleman knows what that is as a veteran, but also the military ID cards that are issued to the by the Veterans Administration to people once they leave the military. So that is really not a problem for the vast majority of members of the military to meet the photo ID requirement.
What about people who are homeless?
Well, in fact, in almost every state, you know, people who are homeless can still register and vote. They usually put down the address of the homeless shelter where they're staying. But again, they have the ability to get a free ID. And the courts, when they looked at these laws, did not find that to be a problem.
Let's go to Joanna. Oh, we got to pause for a moment. We'll return. We're talking about voter ID this hour of the program. Last week, we had Ari Berman from Rolling Stone, who wrote a lengthy piece on what he called a GOP war on voting. Our guest this hour has a different viewpoint. He's been a supportive of the voter ID and has written extensively about it. Hans von Spakovsky, Senior Legal Fellow, Manager, Civil Justice Reform Initiative for the Heritage Foundation. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to an email from Sandy in River Falls. For you, Hans, according to the U.S. Census, about 131 million people reported voting in the November 2008 election. The examples provided by the guest sound like a minute fraction of a percentage of that number. It would be interesting to know how much money is being spent to pursue this problem that seems minimal at best.
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that question since we have a lot of things besides a presidential election. You know, on election day in November, we have elections being decided not just from the White House, but all the way down to the state, county, and city level. I've been involved in elections for 20 years, everything from being a poll watcher to being an actual election official. And there are many, many elections that are decided by a small number of votes. And I don't believe that if we can take what I think is a very simple, very basic precaution that can be easily met, that can prevent some of that kind of fraud from occurring, that I think we should do that. And look, I'll give you a quick example. Mexico in the early 1990s put in a photo ID requirement. You cannot vote in Mexico without a photo ID. In fact, they even require a thumbprint on the ID. And Mexico has a much larger population than the United States that is in poverty. Their turnout has gone up in their elections since then, and many people credit that with the fact that, you know, for the first time in 60 years, a member of the opposition party, Vicente Fox, was elected to be president. We are the only Western democracy that does not uniformly require a photo ID when people go vote.
Getting back to where we started this, this has become a pretty partisan debate. Do you think that it's a good thing or it's a bad thing to not have everybody on board here? Because you've got a lot of Democrats. You've got Democrats holding hearings on this in Washington. You've got former presidents, Democratic presidents, saying this is a suppression of the vote. You've got something that not everybody says is embracing pretty fully. Isn't that a bad thing?
Well, I think it is. But I what I would say about that is that the leaders of certain organizations, some of the Democrats who have said that, they are not listening to their constituents. Because, again, you look at the polling on this and you find that at the grassroots, Republicans, Democrats, whites, African-Americans, they all support this in a majority. I just did an article last week about a new poll that's come out that looked at Hispanic voters in states like Florida, Colorado, New Mexico, which have large numbers of Hispanics. They overwhelmingly supported it. I think the number in Florida was something like 88% of Hispanics think this is a good idea.
Let's go to Joanna in Eau Claire. Hi. Oops, we got to press that button.
I believe your guest misunderstood a previous caller. The Wisconsin DMV individual who was fired was the employee who generated the email informing fellow DMV employees that the IDs are free. They had been instructed by their superiors to charge individuals for the ID unless the individual seeking the ID specifically asked for the ID at no charge. He was just trying to inform people that they were free and he was fired.
Well, no, I understood that. I think what I said was that I think you have to provide a free ID, and that whatever state bureau or agencies are in charge of this have to make it clear to voters so that they understand that they have the ability to get a free ID. And if they don't do that, then, you know, they should be disciplined.
Thanks for the call. Mike in Madison. Hi.
Yeah, we've got a lot of out-of-state students here, and they're here for a time, and they're gone, and they're paying out-of-state tuition. Is it legal for them to be voting here?
That depends on how your particular state defines residents. That is a state issue. There are limits to what states can do. I mean, for example, the Supreme Court said some time ago that states that had long durancy requirements, in other words, if states said you had to live in a state for 6 months or a year before you could vote, that was unconstitutional. That's why the longest registration lead time that a state can have is 30 days prior to an election. But otherwise, how you define residency for purposes of voting, that's up to the states. They can't be too restrictive about it, but that's really a local issue. It's not a federal issue.
I mean, it's kind of not fair to Madison because the out-of-state students can overwhelm the local votes, and they're not paying taxes. They're not supporting the city. They're here and they're gone.
Well, I don't disagree. That's why I said I think students need to, you know, make a choice where they want to reside. You know, are they going to be residents of the state where they're now going to school? Do they want to remain residents of the state where they came from, where their parents live? They have the right to vote in one state or the other, but they need to make that decision and not do something they shouldn't, which is register in two different states and potentially vote in two different states.
Thank you, Mike. Toby in Eau Claire, hi.
Yes, what I'd like to ask him is that it's very well documented that Alex holds workshops and conferences to develop model legislation for voting and also for the collective bargaining issue. And our governor attended those, and then subsequently the voter registration laws were changed. So if there isn't some kind of effort to suppress the vote by the Koch brothers and others who are involved in Alex, I'd like to know why would they be so interested in supporting all this?
Well, I'm sorry, but the caller, I think, misunderstands how ALEC works. Look, there are two major organizations in the country that represent state legislators from all the states. There's ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. There's also NCSL, the National Conference of State Legislators. Both of them work exactly the same way. They have annual meetings. They get their state legislators in. And the legislators, many of them are parts of committees that look at many different issues that states deal with. And they often come up with and recommend model legislation. No state legislature has to adopt that model legislation, but both organizations come up with recommendations in different areas. You know, everybody's concentrating on ALEC. I don't see much concentration on the NCSL, which basically does the same kind of thing as ALEC.
Is that because ALEC really got behind this, though, that they're the motivating organization behind voter
ID? The only difference between the two is, look, there are members of both parties that are members of both ALEC and the NCSL, but ALEC tends to have more conservative views on a wide variety of issues, and NCSL tends to have more liberal views. And I think that may be why ALEC took a look at this particular issue. But it would have been because members of state legislatures asked them to look at this,
right,
and would have adopted this in their committees, which this
You're
is
right.
voted on by the state legislators.
Yeah. Thanks, Hans, very much for being with us. Hans van Spakovsky, our guest this hour, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour, Rhonda Fanning for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We'll return with our open line for September in just a little while.